Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello.
Hey.
We're back for another week.
It's the podcast.
As always. How about that? We're back. Like, you got, you know, the fucking.
We're here again.
The odds are pretty much perfect that we're going to fucking be here because this is just what we do right now.
No,
you know?
It's true. I feel like that. Yeah. No, yeah. We're starting a cult that's grand. I'm Jake. You know this.
I quit. I'm done.
Well,
I give up.
Are you sure?
I give up.
Can we do this one?
You know what? Absolutely. Come on. What
cool.
Are we going to not do it?
Cool.
It is Friday the 13th of May. How about that?
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It is 5:13.
Why did you mention this before? I would have been so much more careful everywhere.
Careful? The superstition thing?
It'd be so scary.
It is Halloween in May, essentially. It's Friday the 13th. Everybody, I don't know. A history of the number 13 would be intriguing to me.
We could probably do that.
But I, just to be honest with you, I go with the flow. I know the 13's got some bad juju, so I try to avoid it.
That seems like a section of an episode we could do.
I was like, what do you,
you know?
It seems like a section. It's like, it's a, Jake, I hate to tell you this. It's actually a number.
It's just between 12 and 14. Yeah, it's a section.
It's just a number, but it is Friday the 13th of May, 2022.
Yeah.
We are here, as always. We are starting a cult back with a brand new episode for you to listen to and critique and possibly even ignore.
You can do whatever you want with this.
I don't know what you do, and I'm not going to question it because, you know what? That's not for me to decide.
It'd just be rude.
But we are moving back into the realm of crime and criminal behavior.
Yeah.
Things of that nature.
You can probably tell by the title.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that you can, but that's just me, you know?
Who knows?
But we are here.
Dude, you know, I was telling Griff that we were doing the Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, which is what we're doing, obviously.
Yeah.
And he was like, how come no one knows about this guy? So I feel like the people just don't know about this guy.
I think it's too new.
I feel like we're biased because this is like what we do.
Yeah, he's the guy that I will always talk about. Before there's actually a name on the Green River Killer. It was actually a cousin of mine that brought that up, was talking about the Green River Killer. I was a child. Very young child is like...
You're like four.
I was like, I can't believe that nobody caught that man. He's like, yeah, not yet. And what are the odds?
You know? What do you know, 2001?
What are the odds? Or it might have actually been like... It was probably later because I was still like way too young.
Yeah, I was thinking about that doing this.
You know, before like people had crazy access to the internet, so you probably just didn't know at that point.
Yeah.
And like had heard about it previously. I was like, oh, I don't fucking know if they caught that guy or not.
I mean, the court proceedings took a while.
Mm.
But yeah, with Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer.
But I would say that's probably why many people don't know about him. Or I shouldn't say that. Why it's not talked about as much. It's just too recent. It doesn't have that draw of back in the day.
It's recent and he's not very marketable.
Yeah, it's,
you know?
It's very aggressive.
He's not like handsome.
Very high body count. realistically, it's just like a sad story of a very broken man.
Yeah, he was never in the cards for this guy.
And yeah, I think give it some time and eventually it'll be probably something that we get like a mini series on or like a long documentary on.
Oh, I'm sure we're getting those left and right lately.
But yeah, as of right now, he's pretty much, I'd call him like a B level true crime story because he's
B plus. He's got some records. He's
definitely bigger than some others. But he's definitely not in that top tier list of popularity.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely above Louis Garavito, which is who we did first.
Yeah, that's like a D level. In the United States, not many people are really ever going to talk about that guy.
Louis Garavito. You want to just start talking about this guy's sad-ass story?
You know what? Fuck it. You're going to realize, if you ever do a supercut of all of our true crime episodes, they're all pretty much the same fucking story with different people.
A little bit.
They're all just, like, very sad people. And to be honest, I don't think we've actually covered, like, at least done a full episode on, like, a woman.
No, I don't think so.
So, they're always, like, men that have just had, like, really bad luck and just really not good lives. And then they end up in, they just start do the same
killing people. Yeah, they just kill them.
It's going to follow a very similar format. You're going to see.
It will. But, all right, so Gary Ridgway, he's also known as the Green River Killer. We were talking about that the first 5 minutes of this podcast. Catch up. He was an American serial killer whose body count is second only to the infamous Samuel Little.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Little's body count is speculated to be at roughly 93 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I get tired.
It seems like a lifestyle. You know, a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, I'd have to say that's the only way.
Yeah. Well, Ridgway's, his body count, it sits at around between 71 and 90. All right. Which is so many people. 49 of these murders are confirmed, and they all were perpetrated in a 16-year span of time.
Oh, yeah.
But really, it was pretty much like 2 years, which we'll get to later. But anyway, it mostly consisted of sex workers and runaway young women, as, you know, it's following a pattern here. There's not really much more I could say without going into just his life.
I say let's just dive in.
Let's just do it. All right, Gary Leon Ridgway. He was born February 18th of 1949 in Salt Lake City, Utah, as the middle child of Mary and Thomas Ridgway's three sons.
All right.
And he's the middle boy. The household was troubled, to say the least, right? So Gary's mother, Mary, was described as domineering and brutal by many accounts of both acquaintances and family.
Gary and Mary.
So she just got a bad reputation. She was physically abusive towards her family, but to none more than her husband, Thomas. She was a husband beater.
That's, and especially at that time, that's very different, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, it's coming out now, like, with, like, the Depp Heard case or whatever. It's like, yeah, this, like, happens.
Yeah, it does.
And it's
happen.
Weird that it's, like, the first trial to really, like, be honed in on about that. But anyway, in any case, yeah, she beat Thomas a lot. Thomas worked as a bus driver, and Gary apparently recalls him coming home at night with no bigger complaint than all of the sex workers that he had to rub elbows with at work that were plaguing the streets.
He wasn't a fan, huh?
He didn't like them. He was just like, well, these sex workers. Come on, Gary, my son. So Gary recalls witnessing countless violent arguments between his parents, oftentimes including Mary physically beating and assaulting in a plethora of ways her husband, Thomas.
Damn.
Right, so
it's a rough thing to see. It's a little backwards than what we're used to seeing, but it affects you just the same.
Yeah. He was Gary was also not the favorite child either, so he was just on the wayside in many degrees. Right. In one specific story, Gary apparently remembers her breaking a thick ceramic plate over his father's head.
Jeez.
When Mary worked at JCPenney.
Nice.
so no shortage of plates.
Yeah, it's like she could get deals on, you know, kitchen equipment and things of that nature.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she had a nice discount.
Probably fucking at least 15% off And you got to think, this is back in the day. Money, you know, money, you got paid less, but money could really stretch a lot further.
Yeah, snip some coupons out of the newspaper, forget about it. You're, like, living off JCPenney for free.
Yeah, she really had that hookup there. I mean, you could, a woman like that who's beating her husband, he probably just takes shit and no one's going to say anything.
Probably, so yeah. It don't matter. Yeah, I'm not going to call her out for stealing. She'll beat me.
Yeah, that's not my business.
Yeah. Gary also had dyslexia and an IQ of about 82.
Okay.
So, again, not in the cards to be smart or have a good life.
Yeah, he's a little bit behind what we would call probably the average.
Yeah, people can have this IQ and be dyslexic and be fine, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. So, this, on top of being neglected emotionally and witnessing an absurd amount of domestic violence between his parents... And it's probably safe to assume that him and his brothers were beaten too, right? Like, it's probably
at least a little
more
bit.
Than likely.
Some of that spillover definitely had to happen at some point
some
in time.
Some spillage, maybe a piece of ceramic from the plate got in his eye or something like that.
Yeah.
It made for a perfect storm, it seems. All right. So throughout his childhood, Gary Ridgway checked all three boxes of the McDonald Triad.
He's a bedwetter.
He's a bedwetter. He's a fucking arsonist, and he tortured animals.
Yep.
Right? Checked all three. He was caught many times setting fires. He would smother cats around the neighborhood. And he was a bedwetter all his life until he was 13 years old.
Damn.
Now, that's a long time to be pissing the bed.
Fire is, like, cool, especially when you're young and learning how to, like, fuck around with
fire. Dude, I was lighting bonfires, like, in 90-degree weather as a kid because I was like, bonfires are fucking awesome.
Fires are cool, but definitely not animal herding or bedwetting. It's not a culprit of
either
of those.
That's true. Mitch has a question.
So why do people think that bedwetting contributes to people becoming serial killers?
I don't think it's like a contribution. It's just like an early sign of people that tend to later do these kinds of crimes.
It's a symptom, if you will.
Okay.
It's
so
a
why?
Symptom.
Why does that happen?
At least in my understanding, it's a symptom because it's a sign of some form of trauma or
it's
mental
like,
trauma.
Yeah, it's like an emotional distress sort of thing, like an insecurity mentally.
Yeah. So
in a way.
Something is imbalanced in your psyche. Typically emotionally, and it can lead to things like bedwetting.
Yeah, and arson and smothering cats. All that stuff makes sense.
Yeah, especially like the animal thing. Like, normal people don't do that, you know?
Yeah, I remember I had to shoot that bird in the back of the head out of pity in your yard the other day. That wasn't like
that
years.
Was a couple years
that was
ago.
Years ago. It was the other day.
That was miserable.
It was multiple days before, but it was
I won't even use the name, just out of respect for the man. But somebody that we are very close to, a bird flew in through a window while he was at work, and
it hurt itself. It hurt itself bad.
It fucked up its wing and its leg and its neck, and. He put it in a box and brought it home and brought it to us.
Brought it to your house.
For some reason, he brought it to us and he was like, guys, look what I have. And he had this fucked up bird that like couldn't see. Its neck was twisted. Its leg was backwards and its wing was all busted. And it was shitting on itself.
Its eye was like flooded with blood. There was piss everywhere. And it was just writhing. And like we're just like, why did you bring you put this in your car?
So naturally, I did not let it come into the house. We left it outside, and we were doing something. We went somewhere. It was in the summer.
I think it was in like 4th of July. We went to a fireworks display.
Oh, yeah. So we were like, okay, we'll leave it outside. We'll leave it in the box. We'll put some food and some water in there, and we'll leave it, and like, when we come home, we'll check on it. We came home. It was worse. Like, it was just, it was like barely alive. It was like gasping for air.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, we could save it. We were like, how the fuck are we going to save this bird?
This thing's
it's
got
dead.
Two broken wings, probably no finances left. It's out.
Like, this bird is done. So we had to just put it out of its misery.
Yeah, I took a pellet. I took it out to the middle of a field, and I used a pellet gun to shoot it in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And the first one didn't kill it, and so I had to shoot it again.
You're really making yourself sound like a monster here.
Yeah, but the whole point of this side quest of a story is that I didn't even feel good about that, and that was probably the right thing to do.
No, literally, you know, the only reason that we did it was because we could not just let it was the box was covered in blood and piss and shit.
Yeah.
It was not
the bird's name was Stella because it was a Stella beer box.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say that we did not abuse any animals of anything. We were just trying to do what was best for that poor fucking decimated bird that was brought to my house against my will.
Yeah.
So that's our experience with that.
Yeah.
And obviously, as you can tell, we still talk about it like we relive that day. Okay?
Yeah, I thought it was the other day. Yeah, it's just fresh in my mind.
None of us enjoyed that by any stretch of the way, and I like to consider that as normal behavior because none of us were like, "Oh yeah, we get to kill this bird." It was like, "Are you? Why?"
No, that lives in infamy in my mind constantly.
Yeah, it's like we have to fucking do something about this guy. That's what happened.
Yeah. So Gary's setting fires. He's fucking smothering cats. He's peeing the bed. Pivotal thing, this bedwetting, though. Because you know what his mom would do every time he'd piss himself?
Make him drink it?
That may have been less scarring in a way. She would wash his genitals for him herself every time. And say, "You're so dirty, you're so old to be doing this, so you're bad, you're so dirty." All the while, just like washing it.
Why?
Just what? I don't know. And Gary, he was infuriated by this. Gary was.
I mean, yeah, that's fucking not.
She
right.
would do it herself.
Okay, that's weird.
That's super that's bad. He would later say that this caused him to have extremely dissonant emotions of anger and sexual attraction towards his mom. Immediately linking anger and sexual attraction and throwing some Oedipus in there. You know, it's not good.
Yeah, he's definitely having a go of it very young.
The age of 13, yeah. So, let's see. Sexual attraction towards his mom. And the anger was only intensified by the fact that she was always saying how he was too old to be doing this kind of thing and how much of a burden it was on her and this thing he couldn't control. Really? Right. So it's like, you're helpless. Like, there's nothing you can do. It's like, in later interviews, he's like, "I just wanted her to stop. She was pushing and pushing. I had no power, and I wanted to take it back, you know?" Another example of emotional abuse came in the form of Mary calling Gary into her bedroom at night and demanding that he read to her.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So with his dyslexia and minimal brain power, he struggled greatly with this and was often just straight up made fun of by his mom.
Damn.
Yeah, she would like shame him in everything he couldn't help. Every aspect of him that he could not help. She was like, "Why the fuck? You suck. I hate you, Gary." So meanwhile, making his forever associating sexuality with anger, like I said, and hatred, you know, Gary oftentimes fantasized about killing his mom. But he would also peep on her sunbathing, so it's super weird, man.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on up there. A
lot to unpack
and
here.
None of it's very healthy.
No.
To say the minimum.
I would say the same. Alright, so throughout high school, Gary struggled. Right? But he managed to garner, like, a reasonably good social life. Luckily enough, I guess. He was sort of known as a ladies' man, like he had some girlfriends and stuff, and he had like a few good friends. And some of his friends gave some of the insight to investigators later as to just how domineering Gary's mother was as well. So they said even the idea of a snack of any kind after school was off the table for Gary. He was like legitimately afraid to even eat a slice of bread after school out of fear of what his mom would do. And his friends were just like, "This is sort of fucking weird."
They'll keep you healthy, I guess.
I guess, but maybe you just eat a slice of bread. I don't see. Was it going to kill you? Like
bread like that. I mean, well, maybe
the
like
bread is
butter.
An example of how like stupid it was. It's like you can't eat anything.
I'd be pissed if you ate a slice of bread too, because it's like, well, now there's going to be an uneven piece. Well, if somebody wants a sandwich, you know, it's like we got problems.
Are you siding with Mary right now?
No, I just, the bread specifically is, I'm like, I get it. Don't eat the bread.
All right. Don't leave the bread alone, Gary. That's where you fucked up.
Have something else.
You see, know? That's why you went on to do all that you did.
Popcorn's a great after-school snack.
It is.
It's just ideal.
Dude, Smart Pop with the white cheddar? Come on.
You get to feel like you're eating a lot, and it fills you up, and it tastes good, and it's just, it's nice.
It is nice.
It's better than a piece of bread.
Yeah. Also, one pretty bad thing. That happened during this time, during high school, you know.
One pretty bad thing?
There's a lot of bad stuff, but, like, this one kind of outshines a lot of them. At the age of 16, Gary lured a 6-year-old boy from the neighborhood into the woods and stabbed him in the liver.
Whoa.
He just stabbed him through the ribs into the liver. The boy survived and told authorities that Gary walked away laughing, saying to himself out loud that he'd always wondered what it was like to kill someone. But again, the boy survived.
Damn, that's brutal.
And I guess nothing just came of this, because I couldn't find any of the reaction of any of this. It just happened. Like, this is... There was no... I don't know. All right, let's see. Nothing happened. This aside, however, like I said, pretty social and well-liked guy in high school, even though he stabbed that young man. He was held back for 1 year due to his dyslexia and graduated Tyee. It's T-Y-E-E. Tyee, maybe?
I don't know what the hell that
means. Tyee High School, all right? And that was in 1969. At the age of 20, he graduated high school. But soon after, he went on to marry his then 19-year-old high school girlfriend, Claudia Craig.
All right.
And the two of them immediately moved to Seattle, Washington.
Damn, that's quite a haul.
Got to get away from Mary.
All right, fair enough.
You know, you don't want to be around Mary. So the very next year, at the age of 21, Gary Ridgway joined the Navy. And he was sent to Vietnam on a supply ship where he actually saw, like, a fair amount of action. That he, to this day, has never talked about.
Damn.
Yeah.
He probably loved it, then.
He may have. I don't know. But he talked about all the other stuff they went on to do later. So it's like, tit for tat. Like, what are we doing here? He never really talks about his combat. But that wasn't the only action he was getting there, if you know what I mean.
I have a feeling I know.
So he got gonorrhea, right? All right, he was banging Vietnamese hookers left and right without protection, and surprise, surprise, gonorrhea. Gary, he was extremely upset by this. He was like, how could this be possible?
It's possible, man.
He was, like, inconsolably upset. Yet he apparently just continued to raw dog all around Vietnam in between probably horrifying and scarring combat.
Gross.
All right, yeah. Needless to say, after his tour of duty, Gary and Claudia ended their marriage. Not only did Gary come back to the States with gonorrhea, but Claudia had been partaking in her fair share of infidelity as well. These kids getting married, they can't control themselves. All right. So he's back from the Navy. He's got one divorce under his belt. All right. Not
just
long.
The one, right now.
Just the one so far. All right. 21, divorced. So not long after Gary and Claudia's separation, Gary met, courted, and married another woman. And her name was Marcia Winslow.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like a fake name.
It's a nice name,
It's a good
though.
Fake name.
Yeah, it sounds nice and pleasant.
She sounds cool. All right, so this marriage was a weird one, mostly because Gary was actually there. You know, he was around. And he was a weird-ass dude, by all accounts, really. Like, his friends described Gary as a nice guy, but he was very strange.
Fair enough.
So that's his reputation. He's like, hey, he's cool, I just don't really want him to be around. He was extremely sexually demanding of his wives, and Marcia was no exception. All right? It's said that he demanded sex from Marcia several times per day, often wanting to do it in public places and the woods.
He's
just a freak.
He wanted to take Vietnam home with him, I guess.
That's like a once every year or so thing.
And nah, he wants it all the time.
All right. Well, public places in the woods. This was all true, while at the same time, Gary became extremely religious during he and Marcia's marriage.
That's a wild twist.
It is. So he would go door to door trying to, like, convert people. He was one of those guys. He would he would read the Bible out loud all the time, like at home and at work. He worked for a trucking company, by the way, his Kenworth Trucking Company. He was doing like a detail paint work and stuff.
All right.
He did that for like 30 years. He held the job.
It seems like a decent living, you know?
Yeah, right.
Probably, I mean, I would imagine it's a little monotonous after a while, but I mean, it's probably pretty fun.
He probably liked it. I don't know. He had a, you know, a pretty active life outside of work, so I feel like he could put it behind him.
Yeah.
He would oftentimes cry during and after sermons as well. So he was just so filled with the Lord, just so filled up there. But as there oftentimes is underneath that apparent religious devotion, there was fucking evil. All right?
Just a wee bit.
just a little bit.
At the moment.
Yeah. Marcia remembers a particular night where the two had been drinking at some social event, just out on the town. And they had come home, they got out of their van, and that's when suddenly Marcia had hands around her neck from behind.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Not good. So she began to panic, and the hands squeezed harder and harder, and then she was released. And immediately when she was released, she turned around, and she saw Gary dart behind the van and come out as if it wasn't him who had just done that.
I don't know what that was. That was weird. Like, did you see that guy?
Like, even if that is like a drunken prank, that's like insane.
And the fact that they were drunk makes it better because you know he was stumbling or like very obviously doing it.
She did say apparently that he could walk like completely silently.
That's scary.
Like he had just this weird ability to just sneak.
That's a weird trait.
You know what I mean? All right, so despite all this craziness, but predictably, based on how often they were having sex, Gary and Marcia had their son, Matthew, in 1975. So he's reproduced. That's good.
All right, and sent him into the world.
Yeah,
right,
they can swim.
Gross.
Yeah, the two stayed together and raised Matthew for about 6 years until their separation in 1981. Due to, again, infidelity on both sides. Because Gary was insatiable, all right?
He wanted it.
But when I said he expected sex, like, multiple times per day, it was, like, 8 to 10 times a day.
Jesus Christ.
She was getting sick of his shit, and she was looking for something on the side. And he's never going to be satisfied, so he's going to go out and engage with sex workers on top of all the action he's getting at home.
Yeah.
You know? He's an animal. All right, so, in any case, to Matthew, Gary was actually, like, a good man and, like, a father. Like, he was actually a good, by all accounts, or most importantly, from Matthew's accounts, like, he was, like, a good dad.
That's surprisingly wholesome,
isn't
actually.
It? He was attentive, he, like, described Matthew himself, he was just, like, he was, like, a wholesome dad from a TV show,
okay.
You know?
I respect that. A little bit. I mean, obviously not the man, but it's nice to see.
No, his extracurriculars were questionable, but, you know.
Yeah, it's, kudos on that front, at the very minimum.
Yeah, he was very caring. He went to all his soccer games. He took him camping, all that shit.
Glamping or camping?
I think it was camping.
Oh, okay.
And we'll get into a camping scenario that was not glamping.
No, that one's I don't even know what you... Cramping. Really.
Cramping.
Just awful.
Ugh. Just drink water. All right, so you know, we'll see how this all played into Gary's life of crime that was to come shortly after him and Marcia's divorce. All right, so it was 2 years after his divorce from Marcia that Gary began his insanely prolific life of crime. I mean, he hit the ground fucking running because earlier when I said he'd killed between 71 and 90 people in 16 years. Like I said also at the beginning, it was basically just within 2 years.
Yeah.
I wasn't lying, but the first 2 years of his killing were insane.
Yeah, it was quite the spree. More so, I think, than probably anybody else that's not a mass shooting or something like that, you know?
This man is a singular mass shooting.
Yeah,
it's
essentially.
It's crazy.
He is a human tornado made of knives.
Yeah,
like,
there we go.
He's coming hard.
Between 1982 and 1984, he killed most of his victims. Like, this guy was killing at least one person every 2 weeks at minimum.
That's a lot. All
right, for 2 years.
It's a lot of tracks to cover, for sure. Yeah.
All right, so his victims were always, almost always, sex workers with the occasional teenage runaway. And they were all picked up by Ridgway along Pacific Highway South, the general area near, like, Seattle and Tacoma, Washington.
All right.
So usually I'd have, like, a ton of, like, specifics on each murder, like, dates and names and, like, maybe a timeline and, like, a story and details.
We don't need that for this.
Yeah, but the sheer mass of victims and the fact that most of them lived a lifestyle generally looked down upon by society, there aren't many investigative results. So and Gary did it so often that, like, it all probably just blends together for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would need a dictionary for all these actual murders, you know?
Yeah.
Just to describe who the victims were and give background, it would require a significant amount of time.
Yeah. So I'm just going to give some details of, like, his method and, like, how it would usually go down.
All right, I like that.
Yeah, so Gary would pick up sex workers in his truck, right? And he'd either take them back to his house, or he'd go out to a secluded area of the woods, and he'd just do the deed right there in his car. So, the two would be having sex, and he'd eventually begin doing it from behind, like you do.
All right.
You know, just normal stuff. He'd then, mid-coitus, reach out his forearm, put it around their neck, and pull back on it with his other arm, suffocating the victim to death.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, for his first five victims, he dumped their bodies in the woods near, you know, like, around the Green River, which were pretty quickly discovered and made headlines. The newspaper dubbed the perpetrator the Green River Killer, and Gary saw this and immediately stopped dumping his victims there.
Fuck, they got
because, you know, like, he may be a dumb guy, but he's not, like, stupid.
Yeah, he's not that you know, crazy. Like...
But, all right, yeah, so with the news catching wind of his story, sex workers became more, you know, wary of Johns they weren't familiar with, and especially ones that they'd seen pick up other girls who just so happened to be absent from the corner the next day.
Makes sense.
Which is reasonable, very reasonable, these people. But Gary had sort of a way of working around this, right? So with his son Matthew being very young at the time, Gary's truck often had his son's toys and, like, a car seat in the back, and he'd sometimes show victims, like, pictures of his son before they knew they were going to be victims. He'd show them, like, pictures of his son and talk about his divorce and how much he loved his son, because, again, he was a good dad, so I guess he could probably make it pretty believable, right?
Yeah, he's got to be honest about that one.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. So this would, more often times than not, calm the victim before engaging in sex. Thinking he was just like a sweet guy with a kid who needed to get his rocks off.
All right.
Right?
Makes sense.
He's kind of quelling the situation before he murders. The method he was using for strangulation, basically like his bare hands, it was proving to be a little messy as he went on for the first like dozen or so, which is an insane way to talk about
dead people. Yeah, just the first fucking 12 to 15.
Yeah, the first like dozen. Baker's dozen, let's say that.
Yeah. Hey,
May the Baker's dozen. All right.
There you go.
So, Gary, he was walking away from each murder with a fair amount of defensive wounds. You know, which is reasonable.
Yeah, I was like, I gave a little pause because, like, that one really just makes sense.
Yeah, it's like they're probably going to. I mean, try to live. Most people don't want to die.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get some scratches and punches and slaps. You're going to get some stuff.
Yeah. So he's getting all these defensive wounds. So what does Gary do, right? So he begins strangling the victims with their own clothes. And then ropes sometimes. But, like, yeah, he's just like, I'll just be, like, a couple inches back, you know? This wasn't the only tweak to his process that he made. Seeing as the news was privy to the Green River dump site of his, he began dumping bodies of his victims in different locations. Genius. You know?
Yeah, he's picking up now.
He's starting to understand. He's getting the swing of it.
He's like, I get what they're doing. They're mapping it.
Yeah. He called them clusters. And he'd like dump and sometimes pose the nude bodies in these areas, right? So Gary would also oftentimes return to the bodies of his victims to engage in, what is that, Grant? Necrophilia. Yeah, you said it.
I was necrophilia. I was going to say, like, post-life coitus. Just something to, like, ease the word, you know?
Nope, he's fucking these dead people.
That's it. I'm trying to, like, smooth it over a little bit. Yeah, he's just banging corpses, man.
Since when are you the one to try to, like, ease the audience into stuff?
See, he's a tough one, because it's like, I feel like him personally, like, just his entire lifestyle of killing, it's so much more sad than other stories, because
it's like going out to drink a beer at a bar because you're lonely.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, he does it that often.
Like, it really is just, he is the prime example of, if his mother just gave him a big hug, he would have been fine.
Or just showed any sort of positive anything.
Like, in other cases, you could make that argument, but there's other factors that play into it.
Yeah.
And this one specifically, like, if he just had a mom that wasn't a bitch, he would have been just, he'd have been happy just painting. And like, that would have been his life. He'd have been great at it.
She just shouldn't have washed his balls.
Yeah.
Just send him in the fucking bathroom and tell him to wash himself.
Yeah, like, he,
that, if that happened, he'd probably be fine.
This could have all been avoided so easily. More so than anyone else.
Yeah. Well, so necrophilia, right? So you would return to these things. In later interviews, Gary claimed that he did not prefer necrophilia, but in times that he felt he should lay low, it temporarily quelled his urge to kill by doing this.
That's laying low.
That's laying low, is returning to a crime, not a crime scene, but a dump site of bodies to fuck them.
Yeah.
All right, so because he never thought what he was doing was wrong. I don't want you to think that he had some sort of internal moral dilemma regarding any of this. He thought that he was, like, cleaning up the streets.
Yeah, it's like, he pictured himself, he privied himself as the Batman of hookers.
Yeah, he was cleaning up the streets. He was helping the police.
Yeah,
and
he was taking down these petty criminals one at a time.
Yeah.
His way, you know, turn in your badge and your gun, and he's still going rogue.
Yeah, he's still doing it.
Yeah, he's
outside the law.
He's what they would classify in an institution as very fucked up.
Yeah.
There's no
on the official document. Yeah.
Yeah, just fucked up.
VFU.
FU, baby. Fucked up.
So he thought he was helping. He was like, this is great. I'm doing God's work, but no one can know about it. Well, he like knew it was wrong, but also he was like, there's nothing wrong with this. You know, it was really weird. He also, you know, his religious proclivities kind of fueled that mindset. He would pick up sex workers, engage in sex, and it seemed as though he would become enraged afterward because they allowed him to do that. Or something like that. Like, he was basically a fucking nut.
How dare you let me pay you money for sex?
Yeah. And I'm sure, like, it was, you know, the anger and sexuality from his mother, and then his father was complaining about all these hookers everywhere. And, you know, just, he was fucking nuts. So these clusters of victims, they grew and grew and became more and more clusters. They just multiplying these things. Oftentimes, Gary would take cigarette butts and, like, chewed pieces of gum from, like, a public place and just scatter them around the cluster dump site.
Oh.
So as to throw off the police if they ever came across them, right?
All right.
But it's like, it wasn't even for, like, a DNA purpose, because they didn't really have DNA testing back then. It was just like, all right, we're looking for a smoker.
Yeah.
Or, like, we're looking for a gum chewer.
Yeah, just it's some type of lead.
It's
you
like,
know?
All right, yeah. But, yeah, so let's see. Yeah, there we go. He would sometimes take the victims' bodies across state lines into Oregon to confuse authorities. Again, if they ever came across stuff.
All right.
Ugh. We have juicy burps. All right, so there was one occasion where Gary took Matthew.
I'm going to be honest with you, Jake. That might be the grossest thing I've heard.
What? Juicy burps? Yeah, I heard those. You've never had a juicy burp?
I mean, everyone has.
Well, fucker, you marinate in farts in your chair all day and smell it on a delay.
I do, but I don't announce it to everyone in the
world,
know
what?
Jake. You are worse than the necrophiliac. Right
everyone, now. If you have had a juicy burp, let me know. Start a cult at gmail.com. All right. Juicy burps.
Anyways, back to the necrophiliac.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like how you feel about notebooks, huh?
Yeah, I hate notebooks or whatever.
Yeah, well, I hate you.
I remember that.
Yeah. Well, there was an occasion where Gary took Matthew on a camping trip. All right, it was at the age of 7, Matthew was. So, meanwhile, there's two bodies in the trunk of the car that Gary stealthily disposed of while on the fun father-son adventure.
That was my best attempt at a surprise.
What?
It just seems, par for the course.
No, yeah, it is par for the course. So once the first of Ridgway's victims were discovered near the Green River, the King County Sheriff's Department, they formed the Green River Task Force, right? So on this task force, there were two men that had periodically done interviews with the then-apprehended Ted Bundy. Interesting, right? Their names were Robert Keppel and Dave Riker.
Nice.
Right? When they asked his opinion on the case, Bundy, that is, Bundy offered up the astoundingly accurate suggestion that the murderer was most likely returning to the victims to have sex with their bodies.
And very... he's just like, I'd do that. That's what I would have done.
That's what I was going to do, yeah. So Bundy told the police that if they found a fresh kill, they should definitely stake it out because they were going to get their man, right? This task force had roughly 500 suspects.
Jeez.
And that's too many. You can't arrest all
those
people.
It's like 498 too many.
Yeah. No, it's true. And one of them was Gary Ridgway, though.
He's on the radar.
Yeah, because you see, he was arrested for prostitution, or like taking part in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Like solicitation or something.
Yeah, in late 1982. And he was questioned by police as a suspect in the Green River, killings in 83. But then he passed a polygraph test and he was sent on his way.
All right.
But that wasn't before police obtained a hair and saliva sample from him.
Okay.
All right. So they had his DNA, but Gary had managed to slip through their fingers and continue his murderous lifestyle. That is until he met Judith Mawson.
All right.
He met another girl. Let's see, Judith. Judith began dating Gary around, 1985. Immediately, the rate of killing plummeted. Okay, so to give you an idea of how drastic the drop-off was, of the 49 confirmed murders committed by Gary Ridgway, only 3 can be proven to have occurred after meeting Judith.
Yeah, I'd call that a dip.
That's quite the dip, quite the valley there. He even buried those of his victims that had not yet decomposed to mere skeletal remains to ensure that he wouldn't return to them for sex.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a weird self-control-like thing.
I guess if it helps, I don't know.
I would have to assume it helps. Gary claimed that this was because he truly loved Judith, which is kind
of
nice.
Why do I just have an image of him, like, them getting in a fight and him frantically digging?
I buried my sex bodies for you.
No, just him frantically digging with, like, a boner. Just like, come on, come on, come on.
Oh, this one's fucking sludge, too.
Come
damn
on,
it.
There's got to be in here somewhere. That's the image I have.
Yeah. So, the two... They married in 1988, right? So that's good. And seemingly lived a happy life. That is until 13 years later.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
In November of 2001. So it's post 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
The world's falling apart for Gary here. So when the innovations of DNA testing would be, Gary's ultimate downfall. The saliva and hair samples that the police had taken from Gary in the 80s were matched with semen that had been collected from multiple victims in the case throughout the years.
Oh. All right.
semen and spit, same thing. Who knows? So this this match was enough for his arrest warrant. And he was arrested at work and indicted for the murders of Marcia Chapman, Opal Mills, Cynthia Hinz, I believe, Carol Ann Christensen, Wendy Cofield, Deborah Bonner, and Deborah Estes.
All right.
So that's eight of... Is that 49. Eight? Yeah.
That's, well, you know.
Maybe 90.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the trial began. It continued for about 2 years. And in November of 2003, Gary Ridgway took a plea bargain that would spare him the death penalty in exchange for the locations of his victims and a plea of guilt regarding any uncovered. And he took it.
All right.
All right. So in the end, Gary pled guilty of... 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder. He wouldn't be put to death, but his sentence is, like, pretty fucking wild.
I can imagine.
Yeah, he was to serve 48 life sentences without the possibility of parole, plus an extra 10 years tacked on to each count for, quote-unquote, tampering with evidence. Because, you know, necrophilia.
Yeah, the tampering.
So, which added 480 years to his 48 life sentences.
Wow. That's a lot of sentencing, man.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. He's not coming out.
We should do the math and, like, what year his fucking term would be up.
Well, let's see. Let me do that. So,
let's say the average life is, like, 75, right?
I think they...
For a male...
I want to say a life sentence is like 70 years. Let me pull it up. Let me do some calculations here.
Calculations. All right. So, well, in the meantime, I'll tell you where he would be serving this absurd amount of time. Gary was placed in solitary confinement in Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla in January of 2004. He stayed there for 11 years. Okay, solitary confinement is pretty crazy. Until his transfer to the high-security prison of USP Florence High in Cannon City, Colorado, where he still resides to this day.
He still resides there.
He's still alive, this guy.
All right, let's see. So I'm getting conflicting answers here. Let me find...
All right, I'm just going to do my own little calculation. So probably a life sentence is like 70 years. So we'll do 70 times 48. Okay, that's great. All right, plus 480. Okay, so in 3,840 years, he'll be free.
Well,
by my estimation.
So in America, a life sentence is 15 years.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that can't be right.
Yeah, so that's the average.
Wait a minute.
It varies by state, obviously, but the average is 15 years. So that's the issue here.
Okay, well, even so, I just did the math again. That's 1,200 years. So yeah. I think it's safe to say he'll probably die in there.
So, yeah, it definitely depends. I don't have the specific laws in front of me or, like, the rules. But
15 years, really?
Yeah, some of them are 10, some are 15, some are 20, some are 25.
A life sentence.
But typically in the United States, a life sentence is, on average, 15 years.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, he's definitely not getting out either way.
No.
That's Gary.
Yeah, so what's interesting to me about the Green River Killer, it's kind of something that I touched on earlier, the fact that this is one guy where you can really pinpoint things in his life that could have gone differently and really changed his entire trajectory. Now, you could argue that about almost every serial killer we've done.
But it's never been so outright.
Yeah, it's never been
as this one.
So clear-cut and pinpointed. Where it's like, oh yeah, this is the thing that connected the dots for him, and he's like, yeah, this is what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
You know?
Have we ever covered someone who, like, checks all the boxes for the McDonald triad too? Like, I don't think we have.
Yeah, Ed Kemper did.
Did he?
Yeah, he was he checked the boxes.
Okay. No, I forgot about the animal.
I want to say Dahmer might have, but I'm not positive on him. I don't believe Gacy did. I mean, they all do variations of it, but yeah. To have like the big three.
They are the three. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I would. I know Ed Kemper did. I'm gonna go just with my gut, and I'm pretty positive that Dahmer did as well, but it wasn't all at like one time.
Yeah,
you know,
and like for fucking Ridgway, like it was a direct result of the bedwetting was another like insanely emotionally scarring thing with his mom washing his nuts.
Yeah, so yeah. Not only did he have that, we added it's for him. It's like the fucking rectangle. You know, it's not the triangle; it's the rectangle.
Yeah.
He has another issue going on down there.
This is a fucking structure.
But yeah, he's a really good example of just a guy that really was just born to do that.
it kind of, yeah. Sad enough as it is to say, I can't see him doing anything else in his spare time.
No, I mean, everything
with his
about,
life that he had.
Everything about his upbringing. And I'm not blaming the parents.
You could blame Mary.
She gets the blame for sure. But everything about the day-to-day life of his childhood led him to where he ended up. And it's just kind of wild to think about. It's kind of sad. I mean, yeah, obviously he's a fucking monster, but it's... The guy had issues, you know what I mean?
No, yeah, we all have issues, you know?
And that's the tricky thing with stories like this is how do you balance that feeling of... I don't want to call it anger, because if it didn't affect you personally, you're not angry at the guy. You could dislike him and hate him, but I don't know if you're like...
I feel like some people might feel some anger.
You might.
You know, that's a lot of dead young ladies.
But how do you balance that emotion of hatred and anger with empathy... For at least the early years, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's the same. I feel like if you think about it too hard, you might end up like him. It's like the dissonance of fucking sexual attraction to his mom and wanting to kill her.
Yeah, it's
you
weird.
Know, it's like you can't feel completely bad for this guy at the same time as like, oh, he probably should have died, but he didn't.
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, he's still there. But yeah, he's a tricky case. The fact that it took so long. I wouldn't say it's surprising in a case, especially with the time that it occurred.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, like sex workers and runaways, like you can't pick a better victim if you're trying to not get caught.
Yeah, they're
like
they're
no
tough
one.
Ones.
They don't really give a shit about them.
And it's shocking this to see that he got away with so like the sheer volume. But I mean, I guess that's. It really just was a product of the time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get away with stuff. I have juicy burps every day.
But it's kind of crazy to think about.
And farts, yes.
That was the Green River Killer himself, not the drink Green River.
Oh,
the
dude.
Location.
I want some Green River soda.
Green River is quite delicious.
Yeah, if you're out there and you don't know what we're talking about, it's simply a green soda.
Yeah.
And it's just called Green River, and it's fucking awesome. I don't know if that's like a Midwest thing.
I don't know.
What is it?
It's pretty much, if I had to describe it, it's like Mountain Dew that's been watered down with 7-Up.
Yeah.
So it's just very sweet, but not as like strong as a Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
It's
brilliantly colored green.
Oh, yeah.
All right? It's more green than anything else.
But yeah, so that was Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. How about
Gary
that,
Ridgway, yeah.
That I think that's effectively our episode for the week.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know if this one would be a one-off or not, but...
I had a feeling...
By golly, it was, you know.
I was looking at... they had a couple books that were pretty short, and I was like, if I can get it in time, maybe, but I was like, it's not going to be here until Wednesday, and I'm not going to plow through this fucking
it's
thing.
It's insane how, like... The fact that he killed so many people that we have next to nothing on them.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the result of all these fucking people dying. Is like, we don't really know, but this is what he'd do to them.
Well, and
it's like, fuck, man.
I think it's not even a matter of not knowing. I think it's more of we could sort of connect our own dots just based on what it is, you know? It's
yeah,
like,
and that would kind of be a mentally and emotional, like, taxing thing to do is go through every single one of them.
Yeah, and it's like, we know, we understand his MO, we understand how he did it. It sort of speaks for itself in that aspect, you know, enough to where you don't need to... I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that are keeping tabs on it and, like, doing things for the family or just the people in general.
Yeah, kudos to them, but...
But it's definitely something that I think as a whole in the world, when it comes to things like this, it explains itself pretty easily.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Like, well, God damn it.
Yeah, you're just like, well, that's what it is. That's fucked up, but I guess we get it.
We got to move on, you know. I'd say, yeah.
And just so I guess, we will move on to a brand new episode next week.
Yeah.
How about that?
I feel like we'll never cover Samuel Little either. Because it's pretty much this story, just probably with a different, like, childhood.
Yeah, a couple different twists and turns.
Because he killed so many fucking sex workers.
Like I said, you guys go back and listen to the other true crime ones. They're all, I mean, yeah, obviously that's a vast generalization. But they're all pretty much the same in certain aspects of... It follows the same line of, in childhood, things occurred that were probably not particularly healthy or good. Which later led to them seeing things in a different way, and that different way was not what we think is good.
It did not bode well for those around them.
No, and it all follows that very, very clear line of, oh, A happened, so B happened, so we ended up at C.
Yeah.
And it's always in that formula. And I think that's what keeps true crime interesting, yet repetitive, is because
sort of, yeah.
It's you always know the end result. You're not going to sit down for one of these Netflix docuseries about a killer that's named. It's always going to play out like a TV show. It starts, there's some crazy shit in the middle, and it ends with the resolution that we're looking for.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Bundy is sort of a weird one, though.
Yeah.
Because his childhood was, like, sick.
Yeah, he was just
like
a guy.
In the positive way.
He was just a guy, you know?
He just got his head hit, and he was like, oh, I'm going to do all this
stuff
I'm going
to change my trajectory here.
I have an idea. Yeah, he was one of those guys.
And yeah,
but, yeah,
like
maybe we'll cover him at some point, but who knows?
I'm definitely generalizing, obviously, but there's a definite path in, I would say, 9 out of 10 of these stories, you know?
Yeah, maybe we'll do a lady one of these days. One of
yeah,
those
maybe.
Killer
That'd be
ladies.
A little bit different. They're few and far between, and I just speaking for myself, I definitely don't want to do Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah, we'll just do another one.
Because she's everybody loves her. You know, that's like the mom.
They're
of serial
they're
killers.
Like the yes bitch, like one of those.
And I just you know, I get it, but in a weird way, she's sort of just the female Green River Killer.
Yeah, sort of.
Like, it just, like, she just kills, like, scummy truckers that are in a different way. Like, I'm not saying these victims were scummy for Green River. I'm saying she's, like, the prostitute in this story, but she's killing instead of being killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all you need.
A lot lizard with revenge on her mind.
Pretty much.
Or something. I don't know. We'll do a lady at some point, but that was the Green River Killer. It's weird. I just keep thinking of this because when you said, like, yeah, we haven't done, like, a woman, it's like, oh my God, you're right. We should, like, probably do that.
Yeah, that'll probably, the next time we do a true crime, we'll have to find an interesting tale of a female femme fatale, as
yeah,
they say.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, it works on so many levels.
There's some good ones out there for sure. So we'll bring them to the table. But until then,
yeah, we are starting a cult that's grand. I'm Jake Mitch was here, and you can follow us on all the shit.
Yes, you
can.
All right,
you can follow us on all the shit. It's Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and we are also on TikTok. It's WASAC_pod. That's the handle. And then also we're on YouTube. You can like and subscribe there and listen to all the stuff. It always helps us. And there's a link below for the Patreon, and we do bi-weekly episodes.
Yes, we do.
I do the extra content. Dive into our minds more so.
Why not,
Than here. Yeah, all right, so that's it. We are starting a cult. It's Quinn. I'm Jake. Mitch is over there. He's going to say bananas pretty soon.
Probably very soon.
Like around...
Bananas!
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.